actually anyone in the world who learned about it. But this possibility was all too familiar to one whistleblower, someone who worked at the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant, which is located only 2 miles from the school, and produced enriched uranium for nuclear weapons and commercial nuclear reactors. This whistleblower had her health severely damaged by her on-the-job exposure to radioactive materials and has been fighting for transparency, cleanup, and compensation for nuclear workers for years. Of this latest revelation, she said,
"The Department of Labor gave me 67% impairment to my lungs. And my big question to them, what have these kids got in their lungs, and how are we going to prove it if they have to be in vivo? I'm very skeptic of the grant money or whatever they're going to be giving the community. I don't want it spent on salary, paperwork, desk work, and buildings. It needs to be spent on these kids, and they need to have monitoring. And I want to tell you something else. This is not the only school in that area close to that plant."
Well, when you hear something like that, if I were a parent with a child in Zahn's Corner Middle School or any other school in the Piketon, Ohio area, right now I would be shocked into awareness to learn that my kids had been sitting ground zero in the seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong, as they so often do. This week, we look into the shocking report from Zahn's Corner Middle School, located only 2 miles from the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant in Piketon, Ohio. That's where they detected enriched uranium and radioactive neptunium on school grounds and summarily closed the school for, at minimum, the rest of the school year. We talk with whistleblower and veteran activist Vina Colley, who worked at the gaseous diffusion plant, suffered the consequences to her health, learned what she and other workers had been exposed to, and learned the hard way how unresponsive, if not punitive, the powers that be could be in hiding or defending their radiological pollution and its consequences. We will also have a brief excerpt of a recent congressional hearing on radioactive waste transport and the proposed consolidated interim waste storage facility being pushed onto New Mexico, whether they want it or not. Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear will provide a brief review of exactly what that kind of attempt at managing high-level nuclear waste will mean to all of us. We will also have nuclear news from around the world, numbnuts of the week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, and more honest nuclear information than we'll find in the about-to-be-released unredacted Mueller report. I haven't read it either, but I know it won't be covering nukes. All of this coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, May 21st, 2019, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. Let's cut to the chase, because all eyes truly are on Piketon, Ohio. You've already heard the basics. Enriched uranium and radioactive neptunium were found on the site of the Zahn's Corner Middle School, forcing that school to be closed amid an uproar in the local community. On May 13, the Pike County General Health District, Scioto Valley School District, Scioto Township, and the village of Piketon met with Assistant Secretary of Energy Ann White. The purpose of the meeting was to present and discuss an action plan to determine source, levels, and extent of the off-site contamination found in the school, private properties, and waters of the state. Department of Energy has agreed to fund the additional sampling required to characterize the off-site contamination, and a third-party independent contractor will be doing the work and will be chosen by the Pike County General Health District. There is concern that DOE's highly controversial on-site radioactive waste and contamination disposal activities have liberated fugitive dust clouds contaminated with hazardous radioactivity, causing the now-detected fallout downwind. At the May 13 meeting, Assistant Secretary of Energy Ann White was again asked to suspend all activities at the on-site waste disposal cell and any other activities that could be causing the off-site contamination, and were told that no activities will be stopped until there is more data. The citizens who met with her also were told that a 2018 air monitor data request that was asked for but not provided, quote, wasn't ready for release, but all the data was in and there were no detections of neptunium. This has now been proven to be false. To find out more, we spoke with Vina Colley. She is, in her own words, a whistleblower, a sick worker from the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant in Piketon, Ohio, who is also co-founder of the National Nuclear Workers for Justice and Portsmouth Piketon Residents for Environmental Safety and Security, or PRESS. For more than 30 years, Vina has pushed the government to take responsibility for the radiological contamination that came from the site, and more recently, execute the Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation Program Act, which was enacted in October of 2000, with the intent of compensating workers for their health issues caused by working within DOE's nuclear facilities. As a whistleblower, Vina has spent decades fighting for transparency in all matters dealing with the uranium enrichment plant in Piketon. Now, with word that Zahn's Corner Middle School, located only 2 miles from the plant, has detected highly radioactive enriched uranium and neptunium on school grounds and has been closed for, at minimum, the rest of the school year, she has a lot to say about the dangers faced by the kids, teachers, parents, and undoubtedly the residents of that area, and the lack of transparency built into the plant and the system that protects it. Note that when Vina refers to tests done in vivo, it means on the whole body, not just a single part in isolation. The meeting she refers to as happening on this Tuesday refers to Tuesday, May 21st. We spoke on Friday, May 17, 2019.
Vina Colley, it's so good to be talking with you today on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you for inviting me on your show to talk about this very critical issue here.
Let's start out so that people can understand who you are and what you bring to this discussion. What is your background?
I am a whistleblower from the Portsmouth Gas Diffusion Plant located in Piketon, Ohio. I went to work there in 1980, and by 1983, I was writing up grievances because we were being exposed to radiation, PCB oil, and trichloroethylene. I was asking for a full investigation to see why I was breaking out in rashes and getting sick. So beyond me, I didn't know what a whistleblower was at that time, but because I filed that grievance, that put me in the line of being a whistleblower. And then sometime around 1989, the community residents had filed a lawsuit. And I went to a meeting because they were talking about the same PCB oil and trichloroethylene that we cleaned this. Actually, it was PCB oil, but it was radioactive oil, according to a GAO report in 1985 that I read. So when I went to this meeting, the people were really concerned, and they made me president of a group called Portsmouth Piketon Residents for Environmental Safety and Security. And then I co-chaired National Nuclear Workers for Justice, and had been fighting with the workers for the compensation bill.
What kind of after effect has there been from your exposure at the plant? What has been the impact on your health, and what kind of support have you had for dealing with it?
One thing, when I got hired at the plant, they hire the healthiest workers they can get. I had no health condition, no medication whatsoever. And after working there within 3 years, my hair started falling out. I was having thyroid problems. I had immune system problems. And then all of a sudden, by 85, I was getting 3 tumors and total hysterectomy, chronic bronchitis, which I believe today it is actually the Brillian disease that's causing this. I had an in vivo taken at the plant, and it said in my lungs I have neptunium, technetium, potassium, cesium, and then they did the total uranium and enriched uranium. The thing they didn't check me for was the plutonium, but when you have neptunium, you have plutonium. They're kind of like run side by side. I had to take gamma glomus for 6 or 7 months in a doctor's office with an IV, trying to get my immune system to come back up.
What responsibility did the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant and those who run it and the government take for the fact that you were so ill and had so many radionuclides in your body?
They continue to fight me. To this day, they still fight me in this compensation bill with the Energy Employees Compensation Act of 2000. They continue to fight me on all of my consequential illnesses and all the illnesses that I have. I think at one time they hurried up and paid me for what they called chronic bronchitis and depression because they thought maybe if they pay me and give me money, I would go away. But I didn't. It's not about the money. It's about the children and the community, the surrounding communities that have been affected by this facility. And the more I looked into it and the more I started reading their own documents, I was beating the company with their own documents. They don't read their documents. And when I found out that, you know, the whole facility is contaminated with plutonium, neptunium, americium, I was just devastated.
Is the plant still in operation? And if not, when did it shut down and what was done to guarantee the safety of the site, quote unquote, around guarantee?
There's no safety at all at that plant. In 1954 is when they started production. And supposedly they stopped production in 2001. First of all, Piketon is one of the largest facilities in the world. It's setting on top of fractured bedrock and setting on top of the largest aquifer in the Midwest. So this is a huge facility, the largest facility in the world, and it's been overlooked of all these health issues. And so how long have these kids been exposed? I know back in the 90s, we told them they had a problem in that corner, a designed corner, with radiation, and they paid no attention to it. Marvin Rezikoff, I'm not sure if you know him, but he's an expert on waste management. He studied the facility for like 30-some years. Him and Mary Bird Davis with Uranium Wise and PRESS, Portsmouth Piketon Residents for Environmental Safety and Security, we found plutonium off-site on that 340 acres, which is in the direction that the wind doesn't blow. We warned them about that, and now they've stirred up all this dust and dirt, and they're getting this neptunium into the monitor that sits straight across from the plant. We've been trying to get them to stop that waste cell ever since 1986. And what has happened is the community didn't want it, so the DOE and DOD, this is a defense weapons facility, too, because Piketon enriched the highest assay of uranium to 99%. And not only did they do that, they put recycled reactor fuel coming from Savannah River, Hanford, Paducah. We got all of Paducah, Kentucky's feed fed into this plant. And it's been here. The plutonium has been here since 53. They lied to the workers. In 93, I asked them if we had plutonium in a public meeting. They said no. So they lie. They keep lying to the community. They won't talk to all of us. They don't come to a full-grown meeting where we can ask them questions. And then in 1999, PRESS and Mary Bird Davis and four whistleblowers from the Paducah Gas and Diffusion Plant came public about plutonium being in the gas and diffusion plant. So when this happened, all of a sudden we get all this national coverage, and Portsmouth and Paducah and Oak Ridge became the first three spatial cohort sites. And what that meant was because of them giving us exposures to plutonium without our knowledge, we never had to prove our illnesses because they shredded our records, they buried our records, they never took tests. So there was no way with it that they could do a dose reconstruction on us. So we were supposed to not have the burden of proof upon us to prove our illnesses. But in October of 2018, when I went to Washington, D.C., Ms. Heatherway said the burden of proof is upon these workers. So I don't know what happened from Bill Richardson to Ms. Heatherway, but the burden of proof is not on us. The burden of proof is on them. But they're fighting these workers. They came in and paid a few without fighting them. So they have their poster children, you say, and the rest of us are fighting through loopholes trying to get compensated.
This obviously has a long history in which you have been directly involved. Let's shift this for the moment to what's happening now. We just learned that the Zons Corner Middle School has been closed because they detected enriched uranium and neptunium at the school, and it's closed for, at minimum, the rest of the school year. How much of this came as a surprise to you?
To me, since I've been working on this facility, trying to find out what is going on with my community and all these people that have kidney diseases and cancers, and I've been working on this for like 35-plus years. So some of it was not quite a surprise to me as much as the neptunium that went off-site was kind of a surprise because I kept looking more for plutonium. But with that neptunium going off-site, and from what I'm hearing is DOE is right now negotiating with the health community of the Piketon area with a grant to help study these kids. And if you know anything about any of this studying, all the studies in the past have been inconclusive by design.
That's one of the points that Kate Brown makes in her book, Manual for Survival, which is about Chernobyl and the aftermath and how the radiation damage has been completely undermined. She said that, among other things, the nuclear industry's playbook to minimize or eliminate any concern about radiation included classified data, limit questions, stonewall investigations, block funding for research, sponsor rival studies, relate dangers to so-called natural risks, draw up study protocols designed to find nothing but catastrophic effects, which sounds like it might be in effect here, privately slander and threaten dissenting scientists, and cast doubt on known facts. How many of those factors do you think are at play or might be at play with whatever's being proposed as a study of these kids?
All of them. I'm concerned about this study because what I think the kids are going to need, they're going to need a whole body in vivo, an independent in vivo from someone to check their body counts. Because with neptunium, in my medical records, I found it where they put me in this in vivo, and they knew that I was being exposed to this. Each year it was going higher and higher and higher, and we all know cesium is a thyroid seeker. And I pull my medical records, and I'm seeing that I have 0.5 nanocuries of neptunium in my lungs, and 35 micrograms of enriched uranium.
Give us a sense as to how bad or how strong or how large an amount that is for each of those.
I can't tell you what it is for sure, but I can tell you this much. The Department of Labor gave me 67% impairment to my lungs. And my big question to them, what have these kids got in their lungs, and how are we going to prove it if they have to be in vivo? I'm very skeptic of the grant money or whatever they're going to be giving the community. I don't want it spent on salary, paperwork, desk work, and buildings. It needs to be spent on these kids, and they need to have monitoring. And I want to tell you something else. This is not the only school in that area close to that plant. I think that the uranium hexafluoride left that plant in the air miles and miles away, because I have a record that the pine needles are 5 miles away from that plant where radioactive. So we have all these schools that's in the valley and right around this surrounding the plant. And my concern is the fluorides carried the plutonium and the neptunium and the americia off-site in the air. And then we have the plant has direct pipes that go to the Cider River where they release hexavalent chromium. They found radiation in the fish and PCB oil in the fish there at Scioto, in the Scioto River, which dumps into the Ohio River. So this is a critical problem here, and it's been run not for safety reasons. We never had NIOSH. The NRC was in charge, and we all thought they were over the radioactive component, and they were not. And then the company told us a few years back that the state of Ohio Health Department was on that, the radiation. And I just backed the health department in a corner and asked them, were they over the radioactive elements of this plant? And they said, no. So that leads me back to where we were 30 years ago. It's like the fox guarding the hens. DOE and DOE are the regulators of this facility. No one regulates the radiation part but DOE and DOD.
And obviously they have not been doing that job. I find it interesting that this school actually had radiation monitoring device or devices in place. Is that standard in Ohio schools, or does it indicate that perhaps someone there must have suspected that something was possible in terms of radiological contamination?
I think the DOE and DOD knew about the airborne radiation coming off site. They tried to hide it, and they didn't want people to panic and pretend like these monitors are there just to monitor stuff. But I read in a book in 1985, in a government accountability book, that Portsmouth had, for the size of the plant, didn't have enough monitors, and the monitors that they had were not located in the right directions.
And so did the school do this themselves? Is it a policy in Ohio schools, or was it something that perhaps a rogue science teacher put in place?
No, it's a monitor from the plant, and it's across the road from the school. It's not actually in the school, but my understanding, they've hired an independent person to do samples, and they're finding plutonium off-site now even, and they found the neptunium in the school. So the samples have been sent off to a guy that's with the University of Arizona. They've hired a third-party assessment on the bedrock fractures. We all feel that the contamination has already leaked through to the aquifer, because we have the highest cancer in the nation here in Scioto County and Pike County and Jackson, Ohio, in the circle. It's not northeast or west. It's just a whole circle from the plant that is contaminated. And I remember earlier years that Dorothy Dunham's well was contaminated with technetium, and the company knew it. And they finally got city water in their homes. And this is a home that sits butted up to the plant. There's a lot of homes right there around this plant. I don't know how they're going to compensate these people or move them out or what's going on, but something needs to be done. It is a critical, devastating tragedy here that they've let it go so long.
Now, you attended a meeting on May 14 that was with Assistant Secretary of Energy Ann White, as well as representatives from the Pike County General Health District, Scioto Valley Township, and the Village of Piketon. What took place there?
The only environmental group that's been here for 30-some years is locked out of all these meetings.
Which group is that?
Portsmouth Piketon Residents for Environmental Safety and Security and National Nuclear Workers for Justice. We're locked out of all these meetings with Anna White. And whenever all the politicians come in, they hold meetings on plant sites so we can't go and ask our questions. They won't come publicly and answer our questions.
Now, were you able to get into this meeting on May 14?
No. They don't tell us when these meetings are going on. It's a private thing with this close net circle of health people, and they do not tell us anything.
Did they allow in any of the parents or any of the school officials?
Not sure of either.
Wow. That's pretty astonishing. That's pretty blatant. What promises are they currently making in the wake of having been outed as contaminating, certainly at minimum, the school and by extension the children who have been going there?
I don't know what they're going to do. Some of the parents have been talking to me to see what the kids can do or what they can do or if they're going to get a lawsuit. But I'm understanding that there is a lawsuit in the process for these kids, but I'm not for sure who's doing that right now. I couldn't release that right now because I had confidence in a person who told me that he might be one of the experts, sort of. So I don't want to, I can't say who the attorneys are right now and how far along they are trying to get these children help. I do know that Department of Energy and that health part of the community there group are working together about a grant. And one time someone said they heard him negotiating for like $1 million, but I can't say that that's true because I don't know for a fact, and it hasn't been announced yet.
Here's a thought that you might want to take to the families that are involved in the school officials. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Professor Marco Kaltofen of Worcester Polytechnic Institute, but he has a full protocol for testing radionuclides in dust and dirt and the ash that can result around, say, a fire like the Santa Susana Field Lamp Fire, which took place just last year in Southern California. What they do is he and his students test these materials for radiological contaminants. And he's actually, in this program, is the one that actually busted Hanford when the officials there were saying, oh, there's no damage, there's no danger to the workers who had been contaminated there, when he proved contamination for 41 of the workers. This has been the man's work. And this is something that can be done, perhaps independent of any quote-unquote official study with this person down in Arizona. Are you familiar with Kaltofen's work, and is this something that might have been considered or might be considered in connection with these kids?
I would like to have some information on that and try to contact them, but I know that the health group has hired someone from Arizona, and he's finding that the school has neptunium, and the plutonium is off-site over towards, I want to say, the side of the river. So one of the creeks is contaminated, that they're finding plutonium.
What, if any, leverage points might there be in forcing the local officials or the government officials to make themselves available to the families and to the activists such as yourself who've been working on this issue for so long?
Well, next week, Tuesday, at 6:30, I think, or 6, at the Piketon High School, the board meeting will be meeting. So I want to go to that meeting, because I went there this Tuesday, and to my surprise, there was only 4 or 5 people sitting in the audience. But the board never had any open comments for the community, and then they went back in executive session. So this Tuesday is supposed to be a larger meeting, and I think they're going to take in public comments.
Here's hoping, because silencing the people who are most affected by this is possibly one of the worst things that they could do. But, of course, that's what the nuclear industry does.
Right. From my understanding, this group does not want the waste sale. And what they're wanting is industry put back over there on that property. The whole site is contaminated on-site and off-site. The buildings, I don't know what's going to happen. They're going to cause a nuclear criticality. They've already had 2 fires in there in the last month and never reported it to the community.
Which, of course, re-releases the radionuclides into the atmosphere and the smoke. We had that with the Woolsey fire, or at least we believe we have that. We're testing for it.
Yes. So what do we do? Sit back and wait. It's just like the compensation bill for the workers. They put that bill in, and 18 years after it's in, workers are still fighting. They shouldn't have to be fighting. This is a special cohort site. It's a facility that has so much reactor fuel that's been sent here since, like I said, in 53. They've known it since 53, and they've let it go. The damage, I don't know how they're going to, are they going to buy all the homes up? You know, what are they going to do? How far is this going to go? This little girl, she wrote me about her brother, and he had cancer, and he passed away. And every time I think about that letter, it breaks my heart. These little kids, they've had 5 kids from that school, I think, that's had cancer and passed away.
And that's not a very large school, is it?
No, I think there's 315 kids at that school. But what about all the kids prior to them that went there to that school?
What would you like to see happen in the wake of these latest findings and the fact that the children are involved directly and acknowledged as being involved in this, and their parents as well? What would you like to see happen?
Transparency with the plant first. They need to come out. They need to be honest with the community, honest with the kids, do everything in their power that they can, because they spent very little money in this community since they've been here. They don't even pay taxes on the property. But they need to come out here and talk to the community, listen to the parents, and then help these kids. Then we'll have to go from there. I told him years ago, you know, we can't help you as a community because you keep trying to lie, and the only way we can fix the problem is know the problem, and we don't know the whole extent. We have to have all the documents out here released to the community, released to the people, and let the people decide what we need to do now. I have two workers who are man and wife that work at the plant. Both of them have cancer. They had a little boy that went to that school, and he had so many health issues, and they took him to a specialist, and then he comes back. He has nickel in his body, a high amount of nickel. And at the plant, we buried a nickel plant, a whole plant in 1979 that was contaminated with plutonium and nickel and all this. But, you know, this is a little kid that went to school out there, and he's got all kind of health issues, and he's got nickel for sure in his body.
And there's no telling what else might be there until and unless he gets the appropriate tests.
Right.
If people listening to this are as mad as I am about it and wish to support you, what can they do and where can they go?
They can email me. I have a Facebook, Vina Colley. They can write all of our representatives and let them know what a horrible thing is going on here. This isn't just a Piketon problem. It's a national problem. Because I was just talking to a worker down in Paducah, and they took contaminated dirt and built a school down there. So, this isn't the only place. It's happening nationally. And the other thing that we have at Piketon right now, sitting outside, giving off neutron exposures, 28,000 or more depleted uranium cylinders. They're stored here, and they're also stored in Paducah. And another facility that you may not have heard about that is it's the only conversion plant, which is the Metropolis in Honeywell, down close to Paducah. This is just a big tragedy. And what is more tragedy is they allow it to continue as if these kids are just human guinea pigs.
This is a terribly upsetting story, and it lines up with other upsetting stories, such as in North St. Louis, where they have been dealing with the radiological pollution from the waste of World War II nuclear weapons manufacturing.
Tony West came here and toured the plant with us, and I asked him, which is the worst place he's ever seen? And he said Piketon was. Those buildings are made out of asbestos. And they want to go in here and bulldoze these buildings down, and they're going to have a nuclear criticality, all this holdup material and the piping. There's a lifetime job out here disassembling these buildings. Like I said, one building is like 30 acres long, and they're so highly contaminated, they don't need to come in and bulldoze these buildings because they're going to get themselves in all kind of trouble.
Well, this is clearly an ongoing story that we're going to have to pay very close attention to, and we will be in touch with you, Vina, for further updates. Is there anything you would like to add at this time?
I just wish the government releases all the records so we can learn what is going on. We can't help. We don't know what's going on with us until we have all the documents. They've never released the documents here. Even in 99, they released very few documents, and they released more from Paducah, and then they shifted the Paducah and Piketon. We are the ones who broke the story about the plutonium. They shifted it off to the Oak Ridge site and then off to the other sites, and they just buried us. I mean, we are just a sacrificed community. They could care less about this community. The government cares less about these kids. It's a horrible, horrible story.
I can't contradict you on that. Vina, thank you so much for the decades of work that you have put in on these issues, for any guidance you're able to give the local community as the newly awakened have to learn what it is that they need to do in order to fight back and provide some kind of safety for their kids. And thank you for being my guest this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Oh, thank you for getting these important issues out to people to learn what's going on.
That was whistleblower Vina Colley, fighting for honesty and transparency in all matters related to the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant in Piketon, Ohio, and the radiological contamination of the Zons Corner Middle School. As Nuclear Hot Seat was going into post-production, we received word of this breaking story. On Wednesday, May 22nd, U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry has ordered his agency to release more than 4 years' worth of data from air monitors near the Ohio school where trace amounts of radioactive material were discovered. Perry says the data from 2015 through the first quarter of this year comes from 6 air monitoring stations on Energy Department property and 10 in the surrounding southern Ohio community. So the data that Ann White was saying wasn't ready to be released is being released now. And still, no word, no commitment from DOE that the current work at the Portsmouth gaseous diffusion plant is going to be halted until more is known about how this radioactivity has been spread. We will keep following this story on Nuclear Hot Seat. We'll have the rest of this week's nuclear news, Numbnuts of the Week, and our other features in just a moment. But first, Nuclear Hot Seat works hard to get you the nuclear news that matters, not only before mainstream media has it, but often without any mainstream media coverage at all. And when a big story breaks, such as the one you just heard in Ohio, we know the people on the ground to get you information that expands and enriches your understanding of what's happening, what's at stake, and what, if anything, needs to be done. We've been covering cutting-edge nuclear stories for 8 years now, providing a one-hour hit of honest nuclear information every week. More than 400 episodes worth. Interviews with genuine experts, knowledgeable activists, scientists, a roundup of international news. Never enough time for all the stories that deserve it. Numbnuts, bad puns, sometimes a touch of musical theater. Where else can you find all this in a weekly counterbalance to the nuclear industry lies and government cover-ups? Here's the amazing part. This show has been operating for years on a less-than-bake-sale budget, and that budget is completely dependent upon you, the listeners, to keep us going. If you appreciate our cutting-edge take on nuclear issues like Zahn's Corner, help us keep getting you this news. That's right. We're asking for a donation to help us cover our operating costs. It's easy. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the big red donate button to send a one-time donation or set up a monthly donation of any size. And to send us a monthly $5, the same as you would spend on a cup of coffee. And truly, it's the lifeblood that sustains the show. Just click on the big green donate button at nuclearhotseat.com. $5 a month, that's all it takes. Please, do what you can now so we can continue bringing you this important news. And know that whatever you do to help, I'm deeply grateful that you're listening and that you care. Now here's the rest of this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. Here in the U.S., as must appear evident by now, we just can't clean up our nuclear messes, but they are continuing to cost us billions of dollars every year at what have been labeled the scariest nuclear sites. Just two. At the Hanford site in Washington State, an estimated 56 million gallons of radioactive liquids and sludge in the underground tanks have been one of the drivers of the ever-increasing costs, which for just 16 named sites is estimated to be $377 billion. And while there has been no public announcement by the Department of Energy, last month a contamination event took place at Hanford, only 3,000 feet away from the Columbia River and a mile and a half away from the city of Richland. And while the contractor did not expect to find strontium-90 on the site, instead of stopping work to increase safety controls, the work continued on this DOE site. Sound familiar? It took a month to stop work on the project, and that only happened after more strontium-90 was found, this time on the clothing of a worker. And at the Savannah River site near Jackson, South Carolina, DOE's Office of Environmental Management is tasked with cleaning up 35 million gallons of radioactive waste, estimated to now be costing an additional $214 billion. That bill should be sent to the nuclear industry and not to taxpayers. In Ohio, the Cleveland-based Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis has found that a bill before the Ohio General Assembly, HB 6, aimed at rescuing First Energy Solutions' economically uncompetitive aging nuclear and coal-fired power plants is, quote-unquote, misguided. In a briefing entitled Bailout Bill, a Bonanza for First Energy Solutions, the IEEFA points out that the bill may end up costing Ohio consumers and businesses more than $300 million per year in perpetuity. This is based on proponents of the bill using misleading arguments to warn about non-existent dangers to electricity supply and rising energy costs when Ohio has an ample energy supply and retiring the plants will in no way undermine the reliability of the system or raise costs.
On May 13, a congressional briefing on nuclear waste was held in Washington, D.C. Among the highly articulate speakers against placing a so-called consolidated interim storage site in New Mexico was Kevin Camps, nuclear waste watchdog for Beyond Nuclear. In this excerpt from the briefing, Kevin was asked, "What are the relative risks of having a nuclear power plant have robust storage with hardened on-site storage principles applied versus transporting it across the country to a consolidated interim storage facility?" Here is Kevin Camp's reply.
So in 2002, Citizens Awareness Network of the Northeast convened a conference in Connecticut, and that's where Dr. Makajani coined the phrase hardened on-site storage, and it was followed up by a report by Dr. Gordon Thompson that Citizens Awareness Network commissioned called Robust Storage, January 2003. So the pools are mega catastrophes, as I mentioned. They need to have expedited transfer out into a dry cask storage configuration, but the design and the manufacture of the dry casks has to be significantly improved over what we have. And in fact, whole other categories of risk need to be addressed with dry cask storage. And that's what we mean by hardening. That's what we mean by robust. Terrorist attacks, for example. Right now, the dry casks are lined up like bowling pins, wide open to attack from various attack scenarios. So something as simple as an earthen berm, something as cheap as an earthen berm, a wall of dirt, would preclude certain attack scenarios like remote-fired anti-tank missiles that could blow big holes in the sides of these things or, as Dr. Reznikoff has pointed out, blow a perforation hole through both sides. Now you're talking disastrous levels of radioactivity release out of perforated cask. It'd be bad enough with one side breached. There was a study done at U.S. Army Aberdeen Proving Ground in June 1998 where a thick-walled cask, a castor, was attacked with an anti-tank missile. And its wall was penetrated. And so there's a radioactive release, especially if a fire ensues. So the risks are real. They need to be addressed. They are not being addressed. The pools are packed to the gills. We almost had a pool fire at Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4. And the Prime Minister of Japan serving at the time, Naoto Kan, has testified that he had a secret contingency plan in the works to evacuate 50 million people. 50 million people from northeastern Japan if that single pool had gone up in flames. We've had studies in this country, Princeton researchers like Frank von Hippel, who looked at the Peach Bottom nuclear power plant on the border of Pennsylvania and Maryland. If that were to go up in flames under July prevailing weather conditions, we're talking $2 trillion plus of property damage and millions of Americans forced to relocate, to evacuate. So those are the on-site risks that have to be addressed. Now imagine those risks traveling through the south and west sides of Chicago by the thousands, perhaps even by the tens of thousands. As was mentioned by another speaker, Dr. Reznikoff, imagine those risks coming down the Hudson River past Manhattan on a barge. So the National Academy of Sciences, I'll close with this, in 2006 put out a report called Going the Distance about high-level radioactive waste transportation. They identified 13 categories of risk that needed to be addressed. And I think it's fair to say that 13 years later, most to all have not been addressed, not adequately, not at all. And one of the most alarming of those categories was security. And so here's Holtec saying, we're going to get our license in 2020, we're going to build this thing fast, and we're going to start shipping in unprecedented numbers. They will match the numbers of shipments that have taken place in this country since 1949 in the first or second year of this campaign. So unprecedented risks, and we shouldn't be taking these risks anytime soon.
That was Kevin Camps, nuclear waste watchdog for Beyond Nuclear. We will present other clips from this briefing in future episodes. And now,
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nut Nuts of the Week.
Our tax dollars at work spreading nuclear lies. There's this thing called the NICE Future Initiative, and NICE stands for Nuclear Innovation Clean Energy Future Initiative. And what it is a bunch of lying, word I can't use on broadcast,
meant to seed a pro-nuclear bias into anyone who encounters it. On the energy.gov site, there is this article entitled, Three Reasons Why Nuclear is Clean and Sustainable. Well, that's got several lies in it already. But the points they make is, number one, nuclear energy protects air quality. No, it does not. You want to know about air quality and nuclear? Talk with the people at the Zane's Corner Middle School and find out what they have to say about what's in the air. Plus, we know that there are radioactive emissions from every nuclear reactor, most specifically during refueling, which is hidden because it gets averaged out over a year, so you don't see the spike. All you see is the lower number. Number two, nuclear energy's land footprint is small. It's a lie. You want to see the footprint? Why don't you look at what happened on native lands, where the uranium mining happened, where the land is polluted, the water is polluted, where families are still dealing decades later with the impact of radiation that has been released on their lands, to say nothing of what happened with the uranium tailing spill that terminally polluted the Puerco River on Navajo Nation lands. Three. Nuclear energy produces minimal waste. Get real. They're talking about the size. The amount of used nuclear fuel is not as big as you might think. Yeah? You go on to say, all of the used nuclear fuel produced by the U.S. nuclear energy industry over the last 60 years could fit on a football field at a depth of less than 10 yards. What a stupid, misleading way of mentioning that. But of course, that's intentional. It is so radioactive that the smallest speck of it can cause cancer if it gets inside your body, if it's inhaled, if it's eaten, if it's in the water that you drink, the air that you breathe. What a disingenuous, lying sack of what I can't say on broadcast. And shame on this branch of the soul-dead cubicle drones who thought this particular one up, because you and the Energy Department and anyone who promulgates this are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, none that's out of week.
Steam coming out of my ears on that one, in case you couldn't tell. Over to Japan and Fukushima, where Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, has been testing what it would mean to halt water being injected into the crippled reactors at Fukushima Daiichi. They've been doing it since 2011. This is a plan to obtain data on how the temperature inside the number two reactor would rise in the event of an emergency and use that information to update its planned response. They've also begun work to dismantle a 120-meter or 393-foot tall, highly contaminated chimney that could collapse. The chimney, which was used for both number one and number two reactors, had been left unrepaired because of high radiation levels, among the highest in all outdoor areas around the facility. But fractures have been found in steel poles supporting the chimney, which means the time to take it down is now, before something worse happens. 74 years after the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima, the melted remains of that city have been discovered on beaches 7 miles from the nuclear bomb site. Discovered by geologist Mario Wanier in 2015, this discovery goes a long way towards answering the question posed by Wanier, who said, you have a city, and a minute later you have no city. There was the question of, where is the city? Where is the material? The chemical composition of these particles, between half a millimeter and a millimeter in size, varied greatly. Some were made completely of iron, others were rich in silicon and calcium, others showed building materials such as concrete, stainless steel, and marble. And don't forget the people. Don't ever forget the people. Pope Francis has expressed his desire to visit the atomic bomb cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of next year, 2020. Which raises the question, will Pope Francis also be meeting with Japanese survivors of sexual abuse by Catholic clergy? One of my dear friends is an international organizer of End Clergy Abuse, and wherever the Pope goes, that's where she and the group goes to organize protests and informational meetings. She and I are already joking that we'll probably have to book seats next to each other on the plane. Word out of the UN that the nuclear coffin holding radioactive material left over from the bomb tests in the South Pacific may be leaking. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres raised concerns on Thursday, May 16, that a concrete dome built last century to contain waste from atomic bomb tests is leaking radioactive material into the Pacific. He was speaking to students in Fiji and described the structure on Inuwatak Atoll in the Marshall Islands as a kind of coffin and said it was the legacy of Cold War-era nuclear tests in the Pacific. The Marshall Islands were ground zero for 67 American nuclear weapons tests from 1946 to 1958 at Bikini and Inuwatak Atolls. Now, that radiological legacy is coming back to haunt us all. And Russian scientists have been attempting to catalog radioactive waste that they scuttled into the Arctic's Kara Sea, including 17,000 containers of radioactive waste, 19 ships containing radioactive waste, 14 nuclear reactors, including five that still contain spent nuclear fuel, the K-27 nuclear submarine with its two reactors loaded with nuclear fuel, and 735 other pieces of radioactively contaminated heavy machinery. Oy. And finally, a bit of good news. Paris, the city of lights, love, and art, is speaking out to end nuclear weapons by joining the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons, Cities Appeal. Paris is calling on the French government to sign the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, joining other major cities such as Berlin, Washington, D.C., Sydney, Australia, Los Angeles, Oslo, Norway, Toronto, and Manchester, England, in calling for an end to these inhumane, immoral weapons. As mayor of the beloved capital city of a country with 300 nuclear warheads, Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo sent an important signal to all governments that it is time to end nuclear weapons. Activist shout out! Movies, movies, movies! First, congratulations to Robbie Lepser, who is the producer and director of Power Struggle, which presents, believe it or not, a hopeful story of grassroots activism against nuclear plants. Three screenings are currently scheduled in Massachusetts, two in Northampton on Thursday and Friday, June 6 and 7, and in Brattleboro on Saturday, June 8. In Northampton, they'll be honoring Francis Crowe, a many times arrested activist against the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant who just turned 100. And a big mazel tov to Kristen Iverson. She is the author of the award-winning book Full Body Burden, about growing up in the nuclear shadow of Rocky Flats in Colorado. The trailer for the documentary based on her book is now available, and we will have a link to it up on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 413. Here's today's final thought. There is an excellent article that appeared in The Guardian, a British newspaper, called Protest and Persist: Why Giving Up Hope is Not an Option. It's written by Rebecca Solnit, and it explores why the true impact of activism may not be felt for a generation, and that alone is reason to fight rather than surrender to despair. In Solnit's article, she quotes from a line of Michel Foucault, who said, "People know what they do. Frequently, they know why they do what they do. But what they don't know is what they do does. You do what you can do. What you've done may do more than you can imagine for generations to come. You plant a seed and a tree grows from it. Will there be fruit, shade, habitat for birds, more seeds, a forest, wood to build a cradle or a house? You don't know. A tree can live much longer than you. So will an idea. And sometimes the changes that result from accepting that new idea about what is true and right just remake the world. You do what you can do. You do your best. What you do does is not up to you." And Rebecca Solnit added, "If you are a member of civil society, if you demonstrate and call your representatives and donate to human rights campaigns, you will see politicians and judges and the powerful take or be given credit for the changes you affected, sometimes after resisting and opposing them. You will have to believe in your own power and impact anyway. You will have to keep in mind that many of our greatest victories are what doesn't happen, what isn't built or destroyed, deregulated or legitimized, passed into law or tolerated in the culture. Things may disappear because of our efforts, and we forget they were there, which is a way to forget that we tried and won. To which I add again, you do what you can do. You do your best. What you do does is not up to you. I'm going to put that over my desk. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, May 21st, 2019. Material for this week's show has been researched and compiled from nuclear-news.net, deunrenard.wordpress.com, miningawareness.wordpress.com, Beyond Nuclear International, the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons, or ICANN, The Guardian, Salon.com, Hanford Challenge, King 5 TV, WSB TV, Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, San Clemente Green, NPR, GZCenter.org, energy.gov, they were the bad guys today. JapanTimes.co.jp, Asahi.com, No Nukes Action, DurhamRegion.com, Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility, CBSNews.com, RT.com, GlacierHub.org, GlobalHibakusha.com, FullBodyBurdenFilm.com, C-SPAN, The Soul Dead Cubicle Drones Who Write Press Releases for World Nuclear News, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Thanks to Victoria Parks of WGRN in Columbus, Ohio, for alerting me to the Rick Perry update on the Zahn's Corner Middle School story, and to listener Bill Smyrno for links and story suggestions. Always appreciated, Bill. And thanks to all of you for listening. Nuclear Hot Seat listeners and followers are literally around the world in 123 countries on 6 continents, and we're still counting. If you haven't already done so, go to the Nuclear Hot Seat Facebook page. Like, follow, and share. And if you would like to get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered straight into your inbox every week, go to the website, nuclearhotseat.com, and go down to the yellow opt-in box. Put in your first name, your email address. You will get the episode as soon as it posts. Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2019, Libby Halevi and Hartestry Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed as long as proper attribution is provided. This is Libby Halevi of Hartestry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that lies minimizing nuclear radiation impact might make some people feel safe, but words don't change scientific facts. They just keep you in danger that you cannot ever escape. There you go. You have just had your nuclear wake-up call, so do not go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Question everything. Intelligent radio for intelligent people. UCY.TV.
Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.TV.